This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Today's podcast is being recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions. Raider creates and maintains technical strategies for businesses of all sizes across the country, as well as right here in Lafayette, functioning as their complete IT department. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'm very proud to welcome Iberia Bank as Discover Lafayette's premier sponsor. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered here in Lafayette. With 329 combined locations throughout the South, they offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Iberia Bank supports educational, cultural, and business development efforts that make a difference in the many communities they serve, including sponsoring this podcast. For more information, please visit iberiabank.com. Our guests today are Andre and Louis Michaud, co-founders of the Lost Bayou Ramblers. The brothers formed their Cajun French band in 1999, performing the music they learned as members of Les Frères Michaud, the family band their father and uncles formed in the 80s. Lost Bayou Ramblers received a Grammy nomination for its 2000 release of Live, A La Blue Moon. In 2012, the band released Mammoth Waltz with the help of producer Corey Ritchie and guest artists Gordon Gano, Scarlett Johansson, and Dr. John. Mammoth Waltz was named number 2 in the top 21 Louisiana albums of the 21st century by the Times-Picayune. Lost Bayou Ramblers' contribution to the score of Beast of the Southern Wild in 2012 brought them renown worldwide. After their live appearance on NPR's World Cafe, Lost Bayou Ramblers were rated number 1 on David Dye's 5 Favorite Live Music Moments in and out of the World Cafe studio. And of course, in 2017, the band won their Grammy for Best Regional Roots Music Album for Kalenda. And I do want to say, Andre and Louie, you're back from a hiatus. I know you really weren't on a hiatus, you just weren't traveling, but we're going to have a lot to talk about. Their film score to the award-winning Rodents of Unusual Size was just released, even though it was written a few years back, and their documentary, On Va Continuer, if I'm saying it right, just came out and will be screened here in Lafayette in September. And there's so much more to talk about. I know you just also released Lost Bayou. So is that correct?
Yeah, it's premiering at Tribeca Film Festival in a few weeks. Unfortunately, we'll be at Festival International and Jazz Fest, so we won't be able to attend. But it's very exciting.
Right.
It's a really awesome film made by a team of local directors and producers. Brian Richard, Terry Weibel's in it, Hunter Burke, and a really, really amazing opportunity to be able to record their score. We did that right when we took our hiatus. We went right in the studio. Right. So, like you said, it's only a hiatus from live performing. So
I wanted to get the highlights of your career, which I know I've just barely scratched the surface for people that are not familiar with your music. But thank you for jumping in on that. If we can go back, and if you can talk for a few minutes, guys, about growing up with people playing music in your family, from your grandfather, I guess your great-grandfather and others. What was it like growing up as a Michaud?
It was just kind of... as far as music goes, because there's a lot of things growing up as a Michaud you could talk about.
Politics, yeah.
Big question.
Community,
yeah.
And
yeah,
exactly. Chef, I know.
Right. Yeah, that's a few. Drive-in theaters and stuff like that. But
yeah.
Music-wise, it was always around. We would go to Louis and I's grandparents' place, and there was instruments out. And then same with our, at home. Our dad would always be playing music, and he encouraged us to do it.
Right.
We took lessons when we were little, and then once we didn't have to do that, we really took off.
Right. Your dad is Tommy Michaud.
Tommy, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. And I read in one of your interviews that you really trained yourself in many ways. And what's that like? Did you just pick up instruments and start playing with Les Frères Michaud? I mean, did you just jump in?
Kind of. Yeah, that's kind of the way it worked. It's something like you just like I said, you take lessons for a little while, and then mm-hmm. and that's they teach you, like Louis took classical violin and I took guitar, and it was mostly rock stuff. And but then in the meantime at home, you're doing kind of your own thing, and then you're sitting in with Les Frères Michaud, our dad, mm-hmm. and his brother's band, mm-hmm. Kind of in the back, and then it just kind of evolves into eventually playing. If someone can't, one of the brothers right. can't make it, you just kind of
right.
I was passed, know, walk up front. Dad gave me some kind of DVD collection from a local dancer. It was from the 80s and 90s, and I was checking out just all these different bands and stuff, watching the 80s Cajun scene in Lafayette with the headbands and the bandanas and the short shorts and mm-hmm. everything, and and the bad triangle players in the crowd.
Yeah,
sorry.
What's fun?
Not in the band. They're like playing from the crowd, and one of them was 1992, and it was Les Frères Michaud at the Swamp Fest in New Orleans, and I see Andre. You must have been, what, 14? 16.
92, I was like 16, yeah.
And, yeah, I was like, wow, look, 16, there's Andre.
Isn't that something?
In the 1992 video. And yeah, I mean, you know, it's like you said, our dad asked us one day, play an instrument, pick an instrument, and then we took lessons. And then, mm-hmm. you know, that can be fun. It can be educational. It can be also something a kid doesn't want to do.
Right.
And,
right.
like, Andre started playing guitar and... you know, is an awesome guitar player, if I may say that. You know, he plays accordion now, it's his main instrument, right. and he plays guitar at Les Frères Michaud, but he taught me how to play guitar just by letting me watch him, but wouldn't tell me anything. So like we really learned like mm-hmm. by ear. Like Andre, you know, learned so much by ear, and I learned watching him. And then, you know, it's like figuring out music for yourself and jamming with
right.
old cassette tapes, and then go and play live at Les Frères Michaud. And then eventually it becomes something that you just don't want to stop doing, and you're in all these different bands mm-hmm. and playing all different kind of musics, you know, as any teenager would or right. should. So
you picked up the fiddle, and then Andre, you play accordion and build accordions.
I do now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know not as a young man, but you kind of found your niche in the band, although it sounds like you go back and forth playing with your dad too.
Yeah, well, exactly. We learned the rhythm section with Les Frères Michaud. So mm-hmm. he played acoustic guitar, and we all played triangle, but mainly we ended up where he was acoustic guitar and I was stand-up bass. Mm-hmm. So that was our main professional instruments. But on the side, we were both guitar players playing in our own bands. And then I guess like right around the same time, right around we started Lost Bayou Ramblers, we both picked, I picked the fiddle back up. Mm-hmm. And my grandpa had a fiddle that he had handed down. He never really played it, but it was my mom's dad, Pierce Melton. And Andre had borrowed maybe dad's accordion or Bobby's accordion.
Yeah.
And we had just both started playing mm-hmm. the lead instruments at the same time. I was traveling Canada, hitchhiking, playing on the streets. And Andre was working here in Lafayette and learning the accordion. And we both kind of got together and realized that we were taking on the lead instruments after playing the rhythm instruments at Les Frères Michaud. Mm-hmm. So we ended up taking a gig that a friend offered us and starting Lost Bayou Ramblers at Cafe Rue Vermilion right there on Vermilion Street. That was there in the late 90s.
Where did the name come from?
Well, on the way to that gig, I stopped at a friend's house to have a beer, and the late Ryan Domingue, and he said, what are y'all going to be called? I said, I don't know. We don't have a name. He said, I always thought the Lost Bayou Ramblers would be a great name.
Oh, my gosh.
And he gave us that name. I said, you can like I have it?
Yeah.
Sure. Sounds good to me.
Still cool. Sounds all right.
It does.
That's the hardest thing to give us a good name.
Yeah. Now, when did you start singing? Andrea, I know that Louis is the main singer. Is that right? Do you sing also, or are you the main?
I'm the lead singer, yeah. Uh-huh. But so I went to Nova Scotia in 98 to learn French at the immersion program mm-hmm. there at University of St. Anne. And that's really when I started singing. I was, you know, it helped me learn the French. That's right when I was starting to pick the fiddle back up. Matthew right. Ducey and I were messing around a little before I left, and I brought the fiddle up with me and just kind of gave myself, like as I was learning French, mm-hmm. I had the ability to play the fiddle out where I couldn't annoy anyone out on the streets except for everyone.
So cool.
And like I was hitchhiking in Eastern Canada back in the 90s, you know, it was like one of the safest places around, and had a, you know, pretty awesome experience learning French by talking to people mm-hmm. and learning fiddle. And so I really started singing around that same time when I started learning French, and it helped me learn the French as well.
Right.
By like dissecting songs and figuring them out for myself. Right. And then when I came back, you know, so.
Did you ever sing? Do you like to sing, Andre? Is it something that you're more comfortable passing that off?
Louis, it's something that he's just always done, and being that he was really interested in the language, mm-hmm. it kind of worked out that way, you know. I sang a little bit of blues, you know. I used to play a lot of blues in high school, and then recently, I mean really recently, in the last 6 to 8 months, I started singing some Cajun songs kind of by necessity, because another guy, Eric Heigl, and I took a tour that Louis couldn't make. Mm-hmm. And we needed some vocals. I said, oh, I'm going to give it a try. You know, I've been listening to it for 40 years.
Right.
Probably get it all right. And same thing. It's a good way to learn, you know.
I read with interest that you guys grew up with the French family, but you didn't know French necessarily.
Yeah, like so many people around here.
Exactly, because it wasn't spoken, because people weren't allowed to speak it in school, and it just wasn't spoken.
Right,
so it
right,
was almost right. lost yeah. For so many families.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Yeah.
That's our grandfather, who grew up between Lafayette and Mamou, lived in Mamou for a good while, and then born in Lafayette, then Mamou, then back to Lafayette. He didn't speak French, and then and our dad and most of his brothers learned it mm-hmm. growing up. And the same with Louis, like he was saying earlier, went to Canada, learned it up
immersed,
there.
Yeah, in the program.
Yeah. And now his kids and his wife are very fluent in it.
My grandmother was French-Canadian, and so I would hear it growing up. Both sides of my family spoke French, but yet, you know, they knew they could talk in front of us, and the children didn't really know
right,
what
exactly.
they were talking about. They probably, you know, cussing us out. But I just found that interesting that now you only sing in France.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the rhythm of the music.
Mm-hmm. And exactly.
It just doesn't make sense without it. And it's a beautiful thing, and it's really a very special language or group of languages, if you will. It's just such a, there's so many different dialects mm-hmm. here in Louisiana. It's like just fascinating to kind of learn from different people, and everyone speaks a little differently, but everyone can understand each other, and it's beautiful. I mean, if you asked me what kind of French I spoke, I guess I would say Cajun or Creole, only in this fact that it's its own thing. It changes from house to house, from town to town, mm-hmm. and I learned from people who speak Creole, and I learned from people who speak Cajun, I learned from people who speak French, and so just put it all together, and that's Louisiana French, you know, it's a universal French.
Yeah, and that's a good point about the it's the rhythm of the lyrics. It's how the lyrics sound with the music. Because, like I said, I don't speak French. I can kind of get by and can understand it, but it was all through playing with the Michaud Brothers and then Lost by Ramblers. I just liked the way that it sounded. You know, I didn't necessarily know. I wasn't paying enough attention to see what they were saying, but it's that sound that I really liked, you know. And now that I'm singing a little bit, I'm seeing that too. And now I get to kind of learn the lyrics.
Right.
But it's still even secondary to the way that it's enunciated, the way that it's, what do you call that, the rhythm of it.
Yeah,
Right.
Yeah. The cadence, pronunciation,
the cadence,
and all that.
Exactly.
I'm glad you brought up Creole, because I read in your background, you know, most of us think Creole, but we... maybe food, we're thinking, we don't really understand the culture. And there's white and black Creole. And Michaud is a Creole name. Did I read that?
Yeah, I mean, because the definition of Creole is that you were born in the New World. Mm-hmm. And if you were in Louisiana at a certain time or in, you know, the New World at a certain time, you were called Creole. It means you were French, but you weren't born in France. Because that was their distinction back then. Like, are you de Francais ou Creole or Louisianais, you know? And
mm-hmm. So you were new.
And exactly. And I mean, so Michaud is a Creole name, but, you know, there's all types of Creole. And over time, it's definitely, you know, the meaning of Creole has kind of changed and morphed. Mm-hmm. And the meaning of Cajun has as well, where Cajun means, you know, in direct terms that you're from Acadie. But, you know, there's people that don't have a drop of Acadian blood that consider themselves Cajun. Mm-hmm. But so then some people say now, well, Cajun is actually Creole because it was here in the before the 1800s. And it was, you know, your new world, you're born in Louisiana.
It's a melting pot.
So it's yeah. all, it's a, such a complex question, you
right.
know? That's the
thing.
Yeah.
And it's always changing, like you were saying. It was, like Henry Adams used to say, this guy that used to play with us a good bit, and he played in the 50s and 60s, he said, used to be French music, because Cajun music wasn't, it was kind of like looked down upon, you know? He said, it used to be French music, then it became Cajun music, mm-hmm. And then you had other stuff too, and then I guess Creole was kind of in and out
right.
there too, but
yeah, like
it's always
all,
changing.
It was all French
know?
Music, Zydeco and Cajun and Creole, mm-hmm. and now you have, you know, Zydeco and French, Creole and Cajun.
right. Whatever you want to call yeah. it.
Right. Well, guys, I want to just take a second and thank Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission. They've been very big proponents of the show, and I want to give a shout out to all the people, Ben Berthelot and the team at Lafayette Convention and Visitors.
They've really helped us out a lot as well.
LCVC has been great, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're very supportive of the community and the culture and our talent. So thank you to LCVC.
Sure.
So, you started in 1999, and then I see in 2007 you were nominated for a Grammy. And at that point, they were still nominations for Cajun or Zydeco.
That was the first year, actually,
was
of the
it?
Cajun Zydeco Grammy.
And so that must have been super exciting. What was it like? Like, I guess fast forward those 8 years from 1999 to that was. This is an incredible.
A lot of small gigs on the road and here, New Orleans, Lafayette. We'd go to Colorado, California, New York, the Midwest for weeks at a time. Sometimes just
come back with at least $100.
Oh man!
Oh yeah!
I mean, yeah.
At least.
Hopefully you can pay. You
rolling
know.
In the dough. Huh?
I mean, yeah, some interesting years. I was just talking to Jim Phillips. Who moved down here from California, and we went on one of our first tours. We had an old Suburban, an old 80s black Suburban that we were driving in the 2000s, and it broke down in California with all our gear and a bunch of other stuff in the van, and I had like a motor for one of my other trucks I had picked up and all kind of stuff, and it broke down, and so we like rented something to get home, and Jim drove all of our equipment back. And then, like a few years after that, all of our stuff got stolen in Colorado,
oh,
and we held a fundraiser. But then they found it because our grandma Ann Melliton had won a quilt, and the person who made the quilt was Sheriff Newstrom's wife at the time.
Oh,
CC.
Yeah.
And so our grandma went to pick up the quilt and said, "Did you hear about my grandson's stuff? They got stolen," to Sheriff Newstrom. "No, I didn't know about that. Let me call the sheriff of Denver." Sure enough, they tracked down our van with
it.
All our stuff, and including my grandpa's fiddle, one of the only times I'd ever left
oh,
in the
yeah.
van.
Yeah, but, I know that meant a lot, as did the other equipment.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, and I mean, you don't
right.
even make enough on a tour when you're first starting to,
mm-hmm.
and it was easier back then, I would say, because gas was cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely.
People went out more, you know,
yeah,
and,
right.
and it's even harder now to tour. It's really tough, and people don't even, you know, everything is streaming, like, you know, it's really hard to sell albums, which helps fund your tours and all
right.
that. So I think we're lucky to have started when we did, and luckily, you know, kind of
build that name.
Yeah, be established mm-hmm. where, you know, and we have, you know, we're not 18 and 25
right.
anymore. So.
So you were single at the time when you were traveling. So I guess you didn't, it's not that you had nothing to lose, but it was the time to roll the dice.
Exactly.
Sure, exactly, yeah.
Right.
It'd be a lot harder, if not
oh,
impossible now.
right.
We were having a good time and doing what we loved, and luckily it worked out, and
yeah.
we're still doing it
right.
20 years later.
So in 2007, they did have the ability to award just for, I guess, Zydeco or...
yeah, they created a new category.
Or Cajun.
Cajun and Zydeco. I guess it was just those two.
But then now it's back to... the roots, right?
Yeah.
It's best regional roots. So there's other competitors around the country.
Yeah, it was too small of a pool to mm-hmm. have the same people kept them nominated over and over and such. We were in the first year and then we never got it again. And it was completely a surprise for us.
Yeah, both times.
Yeah. Yeah, both times.
The first time was, yeah.
I mean, it was, and, yeah. didn't even know it was an option.
Yeah, yeah.
And then to win, it was like, what?
Yeah.
What is it like? Like, do they call you on the phone or is it?
No, you don't.
The nominations come out. Oh, you don't know you're going
to
win.
I thought you meant the winning part.
No, you don't know you're going to win. You have to be there.
But like when you're nominated, they don't call you? Like they just
No, there's
post.
Just a list that comes out and you just check it. So that's the way you didn't know.
You better be bold. Like I think I'm on the list. Let me
we
see.
Didn't know we didn't even know it was a list. So
yeah.
Our drummer knew and he told us.
That's right.
Wait,
that's
shut
how
up.
You find out?
Yeah, you
like
look at the list.
They send an email or something.
They probably they send something in the mail, but you don't get
eventually.
That for another week or
yeah,
two.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah,
so
it really
is. So you just
is.
Looked at the list. There you were.
Yep.
And let's do that for 2017. So that was a full 10 years after your first nomination.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
did you feel in your bones that this might be it?
I don't know. I mean, I guess we were. You can always hope, you know. Actually, it's funny because when we were in New York, the first one was in L.A., the second one was in New York, and we were standing outside Madison Square Garden. And Louis brings out two pictures of his two sons, and he's writing some stuff on the back. And he said, "Here, you might want to make some notes just in case, you know, just in case we win."
I was like, "That's your only paper you had."
All right.
Like your
hands. I had my boys' pictures in school pictures in my wallet. Pulled them out.
So he gave me one. He gave me Julian, I think, or
who's my
lad, Louis.
I had Julian, yeah.
And we
like,
both
remember to mention your wives, huh? Like,
of course, all that stuff, and so we both made notes, and sure enough, thank God we did that.
Yeah. I saw the pictures. I mean, it just looks so exciting, and you guys clean up very well, so it had to be super exciting to be there.
It took a lot of work, you know, for someone.
Yeah, it's actually in the documentary.
For you to dress up, Louie.
Well, because I had my buddy Sammy Parb, who lives here in Lafayette, right down the street here. His brother was up there, and he wears suits every day. He was up from D.C. I said, "Omar, could you please help me with this?" Omar goes and irons because we had just had a new baby, so my wife wasn't with me, and you know, I mentioned Connie Castile's. I always do my collars first. The documentary about ironing, the local
doctor. Yeah, I can't wait to see that.
Not only that, but speaking of you know how tough it can be, on the way to that, we played in Crowley. Did we play before
Friday
that?
Night?
The yeah, Crowley Friday night. Night. Finished that. Drove to Houston. Slept in the airport lobby for about 30 minutes. Got our 5 or 6 a.m. flight.
To New York.
Immediately when we landed,
drove
to Times Square, played a set.
I mean, we went straight to Times Square to play.
And played immediately,
at
2 noon
p.m.
or 2,
or
something
or,
like
yeah.
that. Yeah. And then we had the
and then the
nomination
grant, the nomination
party or something like that.
Reception.
So you had to be up. You had to be
Oh, yeah. And then go enjoy with your friends and go party. And then the ceremony the next day. And then it was just a whirlwind.
Yeah.
But that's a typical tour, even a Grammy
for
us. You know, we still got to pay to get up there. So we couldn't cancel our gigs, you know, and that's what LCVC helped us out with that gig up in Times Square. Was like a, you know, a Louisiana showcase. Yeah. And then the night before in Crowley. And, you know, it's, you know, you gotta hustle.
Right.
No matter what level you're on, it's like,
you still gotta
it's a
work.
Hustle.
Right. But once you win that Grammy, I mean, that's a lifetime achievement. It's just incredible.
I'm sure it is.
It's amazing.
It's so well-deserved. Yeah. So I mentioned at the beginning, you've done so much. And I do want to mention when I saw Scarlett Johansson in the videos and all, it's just I knew that she had, you know, coordinated with you guys and your taping. But what a beautiful memory that must be to... Gosh, you've done so much. But even though you took a hiatus, which you just came off of, we're here in early April 2019, you really didn't miss a beat. You just weren't traveling. So you want to talk about some of the latest goings on? Like, what are y'all doing right now?
Well, yeah, we just played our first show since the hiatus, which was, by the way, our first hiatus ever.
How many months? It was too
short. It
was
5 months.
Yeah, that goes by fast.
And, like, normally we, you know, we maybe get a month off at the most in the winter. And sometimes not at all. So it was really nice, but yeah, it was short. But I mean, like I said, we went right in the studio, right before that, Andre and Eric were on this Take Me to the River tour, which is another documentary we were part of. We played with Ani DiFranco and
Walter Wolfman.
There's all these people. Andre and Eric toured with George Porter and the Nevilles and all these people. And so, you know, they were doing that. We had the score. And then we were finishing our documentary, which came out great. Worklight Pictures, who made our only music video, ended up doing this documentary, and they really did an amazing job. So we were doing a lot of that, finishing that up. They followed us around for over a year and really kind of got the essence. They came on that Grammy trip and kind of got the nonstop work and excitement. You know, it's just, it's such an extreme world. You know, it's like low sleep and a lot of fun and hard hours and sometimes, you know, hard things you got to go through, but it's always worth it in the end.
Right.
Knock on wood and thank goodness. But yeah, so, you know, we wanted to put out the Rodents of Unusual Size score because it had come out. The documentary came out. It finally aired on PBS, I think, earlier this year.
So we can catch it on PBS.org. Yeah. That should be available.
Yeah, it was on it was on POV, I think. And it has won a bunch of awards.
Rodents
amazing documentary.
Of an Unusual Size, referring to Nutria.
Nutria, yeah. And it's about their place in culture and the people that hunt them and the people that have relations with Nutria, whether it be hunters or trappers or like exterminators or people that make fur, that use the fur, sell the fur. And one of them has him for a pet, but he's also a hunter. He rides him on his motorcycle, on a little plastic Tupperware on the back of his motorcycle. And it's an amazing documentary. And so it aired on nationally on PBS. And then Lost Bayou, we're actually planning right now, we're getting ready to start, you know, by the time this airs, we'll have just played our bunch of Jazz Fest, Festival International. We're playing the Dewdrop Jazz Hall, the oldest jazz hall in America in Mandeville. And we're preparing for our 20th anniversary, which will be in September. And we're going to be doing a screening and a performance here in Lafayette at the ACO on September 20th. And we're working on similar in New Orleans and a few other places, possibly Arnaville. They have a little screening at the Bayou Teche. Where we always we've always enjoy playing, so they have a little movie theater set up there. So we're really looking forward to that and the actual release of the documentary, because it's only premiered as of now, but it'll be released in the fall along with we're working on a live. We did the soundtrack to our own documentary and other live performances from different venues. So it's always a lot of creative work going on, and we're lucky to have some amazing engineers in the group, like Eric Heigl. He works with all kind of amazing artists and still finds time to play full-time with us and you know, works on our stuff. Corey Ritchie, from his cousin from on this side, from Egan,
he's the producer.
He produced Kalinda and Man with Waltz, and he works with amazing artists as well. And you know, it's just just a really good creative team and kind of friendship that, you know, that is so special that allows it to go on. Because, you know, no one in this is doing it for the money. They and on the contrary, a lot of them have offers to do things for money. You know, it's like, oh, I see you have a really good work ethic, and why don't you come be some famous person's assistant or do this or that. And you know, it's like, it's a labor of love, and
that's
so lucky that everyone keeps doing it.
And it's very important, as it is, I guess, with any relationship, business or personal or otherwise, that that you really like the people that you're working with.
Well, I was about
to
ask that, Andre. I mean, you've been working with your brother for 20 years, and before that your dad, and I mean, I know it was more on the side, but you know, I was thinking on the way here about the Plastic Ono Band, where John Lennon was just like, I'm out of here, you know. you guys love your music, but you obviously love each other.
I guess you could say
you
that.
Love this guy?
Jan.
What do they say?
Awesome.
You can pick your friends, but not
obvious.
Your family, something like that?
You know, family you're stuck with, but this is,
of course, your
career.
Well, it goes, it's something, because it goes... The music is there. You're going to sound good together. That's by default, because you're related, you know, and that's a great thing, because you've spent your whole life together. So that's absolutely. And same with our dad and as brothers, and we have cousins. The same thing.
Oh yeah,
thing.
The Rayo brothers.
Yeah,
Ismonic,
I want you to get
the family show.
But it is. It's really important to really like who you're. Working with, because it hasn't always been like this, and it's a really a struggle even to do what you really love to do. You know, it can it can really take it out of you.
Now, who's with your band currently? Would you mention the latest members?
Yeah. As Louis mentioned, Eric Heigl, Brian Weber. He's on electric bass. He's been with us, I guess, a couple of years now.
Yeah, three or four years
already. Yeah, Johnny Campos, who also plays with a really good indie band.
Brass band, Brass Carbon Bed. Poppies.
Carbon Poppies, another one. Mm-hmm. Kirkland Middleton, who I think has made the newest member a couple of years now, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, so and Corey Ritchie sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Corey's always in and out the last 6-7 years.
Yeah, it's interesting because we've ended up back on all Lafayette people except for Eric from New Orleans, but we didn't really mean to start a full-time band. We just started doing it because we love it. And next thing you know, people that aren't into the full-time musician lifestyle are able to do it. Like, oh, y'all got to get someone else. I can't keep going on the road and doing all this. So then you end up getting musicians because they're musicians. And then you realize, well, you know, it's got to be a lot deeper than that for it to really work. And, you know, you kind of, and finally come back to Lafayette, people who understand the dynamic of being a full-time musician and, you know, also not like obsessing over it and being like, it's got to be your end all be all. Like, no, you have to be able to be diverse and keep a balance in your life while being a musician, which is a tricky thing.
That's the only way to sustain it, I think.
You know, and it's something that Louisiana bands, like I don't know if anywhere else that I've seen there's that many bands that can stay busy full time and without having to, you know, that can stay together and stay, you know, active without having to go out and tour so much. It's like Louisiana, most of them are from a family that's been doing it for a while. I mean, how many, 9 out of 10 bands you find locally, it's like, it's a family deal.
Right.
And they've learned how to, you know, it's a trade in a way, and it's an art, and it's a really special thing that we've, you know, luckily tapped into, you know, keep, and like you said, just right now having these local musicians who have been this close for years and they get it and they're in the right vibe and not looking to break out into the big market. 'Cause you know what? It's like, we love our music and success is what you want it to be. And, you know, I think that's what Louisiana people appreciate of their music and of their culture. It's like, it doesn't have to stand into popular culture. It is naturally part of it.
Exactly. And that's a reason why so many bands, take Lafayette, between Lafayette and New Orleans, a lot of bands just don't even have to leave the area.
Uh-huh.
And they can make a living.
Employed.
They can sustain themselves in that way. And it's because they love what they do. And people know that, and people from out of state come here to see, listen to music and as well as the food and everything. But because people love what they do, and they don't have to, they're not looking for something else, you know.
But you're perpetuating also the traditions, you know, of the Acadians. You're perpetuating, people want to know about your music, but then they also want to learn about the culture and the food.
Of course.
And the heritage. Yeah. And so your band, I think, stands out in that way because of your deep family roots. You've just got such a large family and so many entertainers that are also professional in other ways too. It's really a beautiful testament, I think, to your commitment.
Thank you. Yeah, we're lucky to be able to, you know, to have learned, you know, the music and all that. And it's as diverse as is our family tree, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You got the German, French, Acadian, Scottish, Creole, Irish, Jewish, you know.
Italian,
thank you. But, you know, and then you add some
Sicilian,
native,
I should say.
Yeah, Sicilian. Add some Native American and African, and that's Cajun music and Creole music and Zydeco music.
Right.
And it's who we are as Louisianians. And it's a beautiful thing that, you know, we've been fortunate to keep some autonomy in Louisiana, where a lot of America has assimilated to the point of not remembering who they are or
so
were.
So deluded,
Or, you know, becoming, who are we becoming?
Do you see up-and-coming Cajun bands similar to you? Are you seeing younger, you know, bands starting up?
I think there's always, as far as, as long as we've been playing, I'll take that back. Now, probably in the last 10, 15 years, it seems like maybe there's more, Louis. What do you think about that?
Louis's
kind of more into it. But I think that's
Yeah, like, you're probably right. I mean, there's always bands that you don't know about or hear about, and like, oh, who are they? And who? And there's always bands coming up, and always people learning and writing songs. Mm-hmm. And that's the cool thing, is it's built on tradition, but it keeps growing. You know, mm-hmm. and that's kind of where what we've realized. But you have to learn the tradition. You can't just get in there and write some new classics. You have to learn. Yeah. There's hundreds of songs you have to know before you can write your own.
And you know, the funny thing is about this area is that there'll be thousands, say like accordion players out there that have regular gigs, maybe weekly gigs in their town, wherever it is, mm-hmm. Iota or mm-hmm. Eunice or wherever it is. And they play their local dances or restaurants or whatever it is. And they never really go outside of that, but I guess what I'm saying is there's always been that, I think, but today there's more groups that are kind of doing it and maybe traveling around a little more, or maybe like making more of a living out of it, mm-hmm. Than just having the weekly job and then playing on the weekends, you know.
And you guys have a plethora of older Cajun songs that you cover, so you'll bring up songs that have been sitting that may need to be rediscovered.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think that's a really good point, you know, and that there are hundreds of songs that you have to learn that are like classics and that are standards. Mm-hmm. But then beyond that, there's thousands that are kind of untouched, just sitting in mm-hmm. piles of archives and in websites and all this stuff, and old 78s and in people's personal collections and in people's minds even. I mean, that's, you know, that's the most fascinating, is when you meet these people who know these songs that mm-hmm.
they grew up with.
Yeah. And okay, how is this, you know, how long has it been since this song has been sung, or, you know, fell out of popularity? Or like, that's the whole thing about Kalenda, is mm-hmm. that, okay, it started like in Congo Square, and it's a Afro-Caribbean dance that became Spanish and French and just Louisiana in general, and became a rock and roll song. We learned it from a guy who said, he was a Vavasseur Mouton from Lafayette. We didn't learn it from him. We learned it from his recording from the 30s that someone sent me, and it said, my grandma used to sing this many years ago to put me to sleep. So his grandma, he was from Lafayette in the 30s. Who was his grandma, and how did he get from Congo Square to her head to be a lullaby to sing him to sleep? Mm-hmm. And so many other branches of the same song. So it's really, it's a such a deep, deep well of information and songs and mm-hmm. repertoire. And, you know, it's just, I go on and on about that. But, you know, there's accordion fiddle music and vocal music and spiritual music, and just it's amazing. And that's, you know, it's great that young bands, ourselves included, or not that we're young, but that we're
that speak we're for yourself
continuing to you know, look back and try to revive some of these songs that mm-hmm. would fall deeper into obscurity if there weren't people there to lift them up.
Yeah, that's great. We're here. I know we're probably winding down here because of your time, Louis. Jason, a musician, is sitting here just in the
hall. I don't want to eat up too much time, but I always love it when you bring on musicians, because I went to school for music and then toured as a roadie for 10 years. And so I'm always like, let's just talk for a few hours, guys. Let's get some beers. And first thing I want to say is you can't say rodents of unusual size without referencing Prince's Bride. So for... Right? You know what I'm talking about. So if you haven't seen Princess Bride, go watch it. It's a great movie, and they reference, like, he has to fight a rodent of unusual size.
Really interesting.
So I think that's where they got the name from.
Yeah, I know that.
But I want to talk about Beasts of the Southern Wild. What do you guys do on that? You guys had a song on there?
Yeah, we, you know, Ben Zeitlin, who made Beasts of the Southern Wild, used to come watch us in New Orleans, still does. And he wanted absolutely to have us singing and playing La Valse de Boulefort the way he's seen us doing it live. I said, okay. We got in the studio, we did it. Turn around a year later in 2012, it came out, and it's like this cinematic masterpiece, orchestral.
It's gorgeous. Yep.
You know,
another movie besides Princess Bride to go watch. As teenagers, when you guys were learning your instruments and practicing and just cutting your teeth on it, what were you listening to? Who inspired you?
God, anything from B.B. King to Led Zeppelin, to John Lee Hooker to Widespread Panic to Allman Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
Just
Oh yeah,
I mean
all kind of stuff. Debbie Gibson, Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Went to see Stevie B.
Yeah, I was about to say our first concert. Stevie B. and
the Cover Girls.
And what do you call it?
Salt and Pepper.
Tigger and Bunny. Yeah, exactly. Tigger and Bunny.
Okay, so you're true musical fans. Like, genre doesn't matter. That's awesome.
That's great.
What instruments can each one of you play, you feel, proficiently?
Proficiently. Well, like I would say none.
If you had,
for me.
If you had to sit in with a band and there were some instruments laying around, what would be the ones that you would gravitate towards?
Probably guitar, just because that's what I've played the longest, you know?
Okay.
Accordions, you usually don't see sitting around, so that's why I'm saying that.
They're trickier to fit into the mix. Isn't the right key? You know.
Well, I want to talk about accordions after the podcast, because I had to travel with some, and that's always a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, lap steel, stand-up bass, pretty much.
Guitar, fiddle, accordion.
Yeah, pretty much that kind of stuff.
Triangle, always, you know.
Oh, yeah, always.
Oh, yeah, the triangle, yeah.
Triangle.
And I think it's two questions that I think we can combine into one. Hardest part of the music business, but also advice for up-and-comers.
Mm-hmm. Man, that would be, I mean, you know, that is a great question, because that's kind of where it's at, is the ability to manage yourself while being an artist, you know. And I think, you know, the way, you know, because I do all our booking and managing, and Andre does all our managing and tour managing and all that. And so we're a completely autonomous operation, basically. And we've talked to managers and all that, but it's really hard to get it to work financially and to keep a balance for yourself, because you can get a manager and they'll either be not good and you won't get any work, or they'll be really good and you'll be on the road.
You'll be on the road 300 days a year.
So,
yeah.
So, but then, you know, and then you got to work 50 extra days to pay them and the booker, and then, you know, it goes on and on. So, I mean, my advice, I think, is really just to always, you know, start small, make sure you're excited about it. Don't go to some, you know, try not to do things that don't excite you for reasons that don't excite you. You know, try to give yourself what you're worth, but at the same time, you got to put in that sweat to where you're not going to get what you think you're worth for a while, and it's going to take longer than you think, and just keep doing it because you love it. And people will feel that, and it'll grow. And you got to be able to keep saying yes and put in the hard work. Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to be original. And don't censor yourself artistically. You know, don't think, oh, so and so's not going to like this, or so and so. You can't please everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it really just takes a lot of hard work and a lot of creativity and hours that are not paid and not logged
and really, you know. Really and the same kind of the same thing Lou was saying, really like what you do and who you play with, really, really important.
Yeah it's as soon as you start making concessions for, I don't really want to do it, but they said it's going to be good for my career, or so and so, you know, it starts getting to be a job, and that's a job that you don't like so much, and you know, it's a recipe.
Now, I think that's perfect. I've turned down gigs because I didn't want to work with certain people.
Sure, yeah.
And it's going to happen. I mean,
right.
So.
But then again, in the beginning, take whatever gigs you can that you want to take, you know, mm-hmm. just because the more you're out there playing, you know, the more people will see you, and then the better you'll get, because mm-hmm. that's the best practice.
Yeah, that's the thing, is
playing
really
live.
You know? Playing a lot is the hardest thing for people to get started. Like,
you can play for weeks by yourself, and you go get one gig, and then all of a sudden you forget all the songs. You know? Yeah.
And people, like, new, when you play with someone new, it's, you know, it takes months and years to get locked in with people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and that's what truly brings the art out. So it's all about mm-hmm. patience and hard work.
Yeah.
It's good advice.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for being here.
Thank you.
That's awesome. Yes. And hopefully we have a few minutes to talk afterwards, because I have more questions.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jan.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Jason Sikora with Raider Solutions. And Louis, we could ask permission to end the podcast with one of your songs. Is there a favorite song? Or I had requested one, but do you have one you'd really like us to?
Oh man, I think your request would be great.
Go ahead with that one.
It's breathtaking. Yeah. So, Andre and Louis Michaud, what a pleasure to have you on Discover Lafayette. I'm I've really dreamed about having you guys on the show. I'm glad it worked out, timing, where you're up, you know, coming back from your hiatus. And I want to encourage everybody to download. You can, I think it's $10 for the digital download, Rodents of Unusual Size. I cannot wait to listen to this.
Enjoy.
And again, September 20th, there's going to be a 20th anniversary celebration, and there'll be a screening of Lost Bayou.
Well, it's On Va Continuer. It's, yeah, it's confusing.
One of the few documentaries, one of the few films scores that we've done.
Yeah, back that up if you want. But
yeah.
I know it's so confusing. It's like, okay, the movie's called Lost Bayou, and the documentary's called On Va Continuer.
Can you fix that?
I think we're doing just fine the way we are.
Oh, my goodness. Jason.
My bad. That was my bad. No.
So this is the podcast. So professionally closing out here.
No, it's good. That's what we need to inform people to realize.
Exactly. Exactly.
There's a lot to see.
Is that there's four movies out.
Yeah. And they're all good.
Beasts of Southern Wild is amazing if you haven't seen it. And this, as a little preface to the song, this is not what you'll hear when you come to Lost Bayou Ramblers concert, but if you ever get the chance, and last I heard, they were working on getting the orchestra show here to Lafayette, a screening of Beasts of the Wild where we play, they call us the Creole Band, and we sit on the front row of the orchestra next to the conductor, and there's a whole like 30-piece orchestra playing this music, and we get to play our little parts, and we get to sit back and hear the orchestra and watch the movie.
It's a really great experience if you've ever seen a live soundtrack done with a movie. It's incredible.
And this movie has got, I mean, four Oscar nominations, the youngest female actress nominated ever, who's from Houma, Kavinjane Wallace.
Yeah,
amazing. So it's a quite the experience. Hopefully we can bring it to Lafayette.
Yeah. And on that note, I do want to tell people, you know, there's something about being part of a live musical experience that is just unbeatable. So I'm hoping people will be looking early to sign up for the September 20th event and check out Lost Bayou Ramblers. I just can't say enough about your music and what you do for our culture. So Andre and Louie, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us, Jan.
Yeah, on behalf of Discover Lafayette, Jan Swift.